When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This
is the Rich Eisen Show.
Goats have home lives too.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles. Rich Eisen.
Hello, Rich Eisen.
Rich Eisen. Oh, that's Susie Eisen's husband.
The Rich Eisen Show. And now, sitting in for Rich, here's Brian Weber.
It's the final hour of the program. Great to have you with us on a jam-packed Thursday. 1-844-204-RICH is our phone number. You can always tweet at me, BW Weber, Weber with two B's. Football has dominated the conversation. Let's keep it going. Jump right in and say hello to Lindsey Jones, senior NFL writer for The Athletic. Lindsey, thanks so much for taking the time. How are you?
I am good. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. So let's start with the news that was generated earlier today in Pittsburgh. No surprise that Ben Roethlisberger acknowledged what seemed to be true, saying it's likely that it'll be his last game at Heinz Field on Monday night when the Steelers host the Browns, unless Pittsburgh can sneak into the postseason. So there had been some murmurs. Adam Schefter had the report a few weeks ago that Roethlisberger was already starting to tell confidants and folks within the Steeler organization that he was of the mindset this was it, he was going to retire. Given that we've been trending in this direction, are you surprised at all that the Steelers haven't seemingly been better prepared for life after Ben and what they could do next season?
Yeah, it's been one of the more perplexing things over the last couple off seasons, actually, not just kind of specific to what happened earlier in 2021, because, you know, while Ben Roethlisberger has still had some nice moments over the last season or two here and there, I mean, I think it's been pretty obvious that, you know, he's very near the end of his career. And, you know, this is a smart organization. There's been a lot of stability there, obviously with the coaching staff, but certainly in the front office as well, that, you know, it just doesn't trend with a lot of the other type of long-term planning that organization has, that they haven't done more to address the quarterback situation, because they're going to head into this offseason now and facing a really uncertain quarterback market where the free agent market is not going to be great. And this is not a stellar draft class of quarterbacks. So, you know, they're really going to be in this awkward situation where you have to figure out, okay, is it going to be Mason Rudolph? Are we going to do a year with Mason Rudolph? Are we going to put all of our chips into trying to trade for a veteran quarterback? See if you can lure Aaron Rodgers, you know, if that's something that you might want to pursue. But yeah, it's really difficult right now, because it's a really tough situation to be looking for a quarterback, and they're going to be just one of several teams that are now trying to figure out next year's quarterback plan.
Let's stay in that division. The Bengals, undeniably one of the best stories in all of football, and what a sensational Sunday Joe Burrow had. Yes, Baltimore was battered with a ton of injuries and had to go with Josh Johnson, but he wasn't playing defense, and Burrow just lit up the Ravens' defense. Going to learn a lot more about Cincinnati hosting Kansas City on Sunday, but Lindsey, irrespective of the outcome of that game, do you think that this Bengal team could be built to have an impact if they're the division champs and they host a playoff game when we get to the postseason?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right that this is a huge game coming up against Kansas City this week. I mean, it's very much going to be a measuring stick game for the Bengals to see exactly where they're at. The Chiefs defense, for as much as they struggled early this season, they've been playing great over the last 4 to 6 weeks. So this is going to be the best defense that the Bengals offense has faced in a very long time. I mean, the 525 yards that Burrow put up last week was phenomenal, but the Ravens defense, as you mentioned, it wasn't just their offense that was shorthanded. Their defense was very, very shorthanded as well. So this is going to be a huge challenge. And it does kind of feel like the Bengals maybe are a little ahead of schedule. Maybe they're a year ahead or two of this kind of rebuild process and what this team is eventually going to look like around Joe Burrow. But what we've seen from them this season is that they can really hang with anybody. I mean, they lost a couple really close games early this season. I mean, you know, I kind of point to the loss that they had. I believe it was an overtime when there were 18 missed field goals at Lambeau Field, where that to me was a game that was like, okay, they didn't win that game, but you're seeing something, the metal out of Joe Burrow of what, you know, he's ready to kind of go toe-to-toe with the elite quarterbacks. So, you know, I don't think I quite have them in that tier of Super Bowl contenders right now, but, you know, I think they're going to be a really interesting team to watch, not just this postseason, but the way that they kind of continue to build this thing moving forward.
I'm Brian Weber in for Rich Eisen. It's the Rich Eisen Show, talking football with Lindsey Jones, senior NFL writer of The Athletic. Well, we spent so much time talking about the top of the standings and Green Bay, and I want to get to Dallas in a moment. And then there's the perception it's Kansas City and everybody else in the AFC. But given the additional wild card, and we know what happens in the postseason, doesn't matter if you're divisional champ or wild card, you can certainly put together a brilliant run. What do you make of the Chargers? And I don't want to overreact to a single game. And I watched the game because I'm here in Southern California, so I know they didn't have Joey Bosa, and they didn't have Derwin James. But I can't just overlook the fact that not only did they lose to Houston, they got pushed around. So, Lindsey, how much confidence do you have in the Chargers down the stretch?
Yeah, they're such an interesting case, right? We actually kind of did an exercise on my podcast yesterday where we went through all the potential wildcard teams and how dangerous they would be. And the Chargers are as dangerous as anybody in that kind of next tier down of the potential wildcard teams because of Joe Burrow. I mean, if you're going to count on getting kind of one brilliant game from a quarterback that's in that wildcard mix, it's Joe Burrow, right? It's Justin Herbert.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm looking at Cincinnati right here on my screen in front of me. But yeah, it's Justin Herbert because, you know, you look at the other guys there. It's Tua, it's Mac Jones, it's Lamar Jackson, who might not even play this week because he can barely walk. I mean, we saw him hobbling around the field, or it's Carson Wentz. You know, I'm going to take Justin Herbert in any of those matchups. But what we saw to the Chargers defense last week against Houston was extremely troubling. And yes, there'll be a better defense when you have Bosa and Derwin James back on the field. Joey Bosa has already been activated off of the COVID list, so he'll be back this week against Denver. But, I mean, it was rough. I mean, they've been run on all season. And I'm very curious to see if the Broncos, who beat the Chargers a couple weeks ago by running the ball over and over, if they're able to have another one of those really good rushing performances. But yeah, it's scary to kind of count on that defense right now. But if they're able to sneak in, if they're able to win out, which would include beating the Broncos and beating the Ravens and getting some other help, they're as dangerous as anybody in that field, just because Justin Herbert makes their ceiling higher than any of the other wild card teams.
Spotlighting the NFL with Lindsey Jones of The Athletic. Lindsey, everything gets magnified when Dallas is good. Our Twitter feeds light up, and Cowboy fans say, I told you this was the year, although they haven't won anything, as you know, since the mid-90s. But given the strength of the defense, and Micah Parsons being transcendent, and a healthy DeMarcus Lawrence, who had that brilliant play on Sunday Night Football, even if Dak remains inconsistent, don't you think the Cowboys have, in my view at least, the most disruptive unit in all of football? And maybe we should talk about them potentially as the team to beat in the NFC.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're putting it all together at the right time. I mean, their offense kind of had that slump in early December. They burst out of it without any question last week against Washington. We'll see if they're able to kind of keep up that pace. But, I mean, their defense has been one of the stories of the season, probably the unit that has been most impressive, that had the most questions about them going into the season. I mean, I know my takes, and I'm surely not alone in this, but, you know, I thought Dallas was going to be good, but I thought they were going to be good because they'd be scoring 35 points a game and might be winning a lot of games, you know, 35-30. What we've seen is that they're winning games and they're one of the best teams in the NFC, if not the entire NFL, because of that defense, as you mentioned. And now that they're healthy, you know, you're having these really breakthrough performances from some young guys. I think they can hang with anybody now in the NFC. And, you know, God, that game against Tampa was so long ago, that Thursday night in week one. I'd love to see them against that offense again. I'd love to see the Cowboys against Tom Brady, and maybe that game ends up differently. I think they could go into Green Bay and absolutely compete with the Packers. So, you know, I think we should be considering them as, you know, one of those very, very top tier teams. You know, we just have to see them do it in the postseason. And, you know, at this point, they don't have that sort of, you know, track record. You know, a couple of years ago, gosh, now probably what, 5 years ago, they were kind of the NFC favorite, lost at home to Green Bay, and they haven't really been back at that level ever since. And so I want to see them, you know, really make a statement in the playoffs. Their game this weekend against Arizona, and like, look, the Cardinals have really been struggling lately. I think that should have been the game of the week before the Cardinals went on this 3-game losing streak. It's going to be a kind of a statement kind of game. It's another national game for them if they can kind of put together. I don't know if it's fair to, you know, to expect the type of performance that they had against Washington. That was just one of those games that just steamrolled and kind of got out of control really, really quickly. But this is another chance for them to, you know, make a statement against another NFC team that, you know, that they're one of the teams to beat all the way through the postseason.
Since you alluded to your podcast and you went through the contender pretender analysis in both conferences, let's leverage that content. If we accept Kansas City as undeniably the best team in the AFC, if I put you on the spot right now, who would you put in that second slot? Who could give the Chiefs potentially the most trouble?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Bills are right there. I think they've gotten back there. It's kind of crazy that those were supposed to be the two best teams in the AFC. And for a lot of the season, they had kind of fallen out of that conversation, but we're kind of right back with the top tier teams. You know, I think the Bills are right there. The Colts are going to be really interesting if they're able to kind of make a run as a wild card team, just because of, I think, the way that they're built. Their offense travels, right? You know, if you could go into Arrowhead Stadium on a cold, windy day in late January and Jonathan Taylor can rush for 150 or 200 yards, that might be a way to beat the Chiefs. And the Colts are just so well coached, and that roster is so deep that they could potentially do that. But I do think it's the Chiefs, the Bills, and then there's a little bit of a gap between everybody else and the rest of the conference. And it took a while to get there. The Bills certainly have struggled at times this year. I mean, the fact that they lost to Jacksonville in a game where I think, what was it, like 6-3, something like that. I mean, that's going to be one of those weirdest what the heck happened moments of this season. But I do think that now, late December, those teams have kind of pulled away from the rest of the conference.
Lindsay, I really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much for your time and your insights. Happy holidays and have a great new year.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy holidays to you, too.
Thanks so much, Lindsay Jones. Check out her outstanding work, senior NFL writer for The Athletic. That completes our trifecta of guests. So I'm open. I have a mindset of it could happen, with the caveat that we take phone calls selectively on any show I'm hosting. 1-844-204-RICH. You can continue to tweet at me, BW Weber, Weber with two B's, football the rest of the way. Want to follow up on what Lindsay was talking about regarding the latest collapse of the Cardinals. Remember, go back to last year. They didn't start as brilliantly as they did this year, but they had a quality foundation, then fell apart. And this year, it's been a monumental implosion. So we're going to put the NFC West in the focus coming up in 30 minutes and how much we should be fully embracing the Matthew Stafford experience. I can't unremember. I can't jump into my memory bank and take out the vivid images of Matthew Stafford as a Lion in the playoffs, hasn't won a playoff game, because the Lions have only won a single playoff game since 1957. And I'm a little bit wonky when it comes to history and hanging on to some nuggets. But every time I mention the Lions, I have to follow up with that thought in the following sentence. One playoff win since 1957. You know how hard it is to be that consistently incompetent in a sport in which just about every year somebody goes from worst to first. The entire business model is parity, hope across the league. Think about all the teams still in playoff contention in both conferences. But what can you have a degree of certainty in and year out? The Lions are going to be garbage. Two wins again. But we'll talk about Stafford, Garoppolo, if healthy enough to gut his way through the thumb injury for the Niners coming up on Sunday. Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. Team still in playoff contention in the NFC West coming up in 30 minutes. A couple more thoughts in the wake of what Lindsay was laying out, and I appreciate her analysis. If I get to give you another team in the AFC, I'm going with the Tennessee Titans, in part because I love saying Tennessee Titans and over-enunciating, hitting all those T's. But the year is so long, and we get caught up in the magnitude of the big events that seem to change the entire tale of a year and everything the Titans have endured since Derrick Henry went down tells us that this is a team that is not only missing the best running back in all of football, they're missing their identity. I get it. But Derrick Henry could be back as soon as next week. Let's just say, worst case, back for the playoffs. Tennessee on the brink of wrapping up that division. That means you host the playoff game. Here's who Tennessee has beaten at home this year. Just took care of the Niners on Thursday Night Football. And don't you think the return of A.J. Brown was transformational? Ryan Tannehill looked like a serviceable quarterback after he had been atrocious over the last month, throwing more interceptions this year than the last two seasons combined. A.J. Brown comes back, and everything looks different. So you have a home victory over the Niners. They've beaten the Colts. They have beaten the Bills, in part because Josh Allen slipped inside the five. Still, scoreboard matters. Final score, Tennessee defeats Buffalo. And they have a home win over the Chiefs. So, yes, I have concerns about Ryan Tannehill. I've seen him play. I think I might have given you, if you heard me filling in another show the day after Thanksgiving, the stone-cold lock that Mike Vrabel would go back to Gillette Stadium and stick it to Bill Belichick one more time because I believed in the defense and I thought that Tannehill could do just enough to win the game. And that was actually a possibility till midway through the third when Tannehill kept turning it over in every critical situation. But if you ask him to do less, specifically, give the ball to a healthy Derrick Henry who will be rested and have fresh legs, I think Tennessee is going to be a tough out when we get to the postseason. 1-844-204-RICH is the phone number. Twitter, always looking for quality content on the old tweet machine. That is BW Weber, Weber with two B's. Straight ahead, we get back under center, looking towards the future for quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and Baker Mayfield. Didn't have a chance to address Baker earlier in the program. And since the future is now apparently not going to happen for Ben Roethlisberger, two Super Bowls put you in the Hall of Fame, first ballot for Ben. But as we look back over his career, fair to say, given all the talent surrounding Roethlisberger, that the Steelers should have won even more. That's coming up. I'm Brian Weber, in for Rich Eisen. This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. It's that time of year, people. Spring has sprung, and that means spring cleaning, or at least the partner in your life is demanding that you do it. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip, that flight you've been eyeing, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta by using the code EISEN when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use my code EISEN. That's IBOTTA in the Google Play or App Store and use my code EISEN.
It's the Rich Eisen Show. Brian Weber in for Rich. 1-844-204-RICH. Twitter handle is BW Weber. Weber with two B's. Home stretch on this Thursday. Back with you tomorrow to wrap up the year. Among our scheduled guests, we'll talk plenty more NFL with Eric Edom, Yahoo Sports, Nick Ferguson, former NFL safety. Now doing radio in Denver, 104.3 The Fan. Talk about Vic Fangio landing on the list of coaches that could be in trouble. And Vic, aware of what's out there, did the rare public lobbying to keep his job at his press conference earlier this week. You can quibble with the optics. You can say, might feel needy, but what does he have to lose? Only 32 of those jobs. So if you feel like you can enhance your potential to hang on, maybe drum up some public sympathy. How about this? Win your last two football games, and 9-8 feels a lot better than the alternative. Still getting used to making sure I get the math right. And we know why we have this clunky 17-game regular season, as the philosopher Randy Moss immortally said, straight cash, homie. And if 17 feels weird, well, don't get too attached to it, because you know we're going to 18 very soon. I think ultimately we will have a Super Bowl played on the Sunday in the middle of President's Day weekend, which will solve a lot of issues. You don't have to come up with the, oh, my stomach hurts, I can't go to work on the day after the Super Bowl if it's already a holiday. It expands the reach of the NFL all the way until the end, effectively, of February. It gives the networks even more content because the postseason, presumably, will be expanded along the way, especially when we get to 34, 36 teams. But in our immediate future, we have a Super Bowl coming up in Los Angeles, Inglewood to be precise, as I come to you from our Regal Studios in Southern California. History made a year ago, Tom Brady and the Bucs becoming the first team to play a Super Bowl on their home field, and they won it all. Do the Rams have a legitimate chance of duplicating that feat? We'll try to sort out what's really happening within the NFC West in 15 minutes. Quarterback conversation has dominated the program, understandably so. After Aaron Rodgers had his press conference yesterday, that was going to be the focal point of the program either way. And then the news a couple hours before we went on the air, Ben Roethlisberger acknowledging what we presume to be true, that the Monday night game coming up against Cleveland has a strong likelihood of being his last home game as a member of the Steelers, unless they can find a way to get into the postseason. So, legacy secured. Two Super Bowls changes everything. Think about Peyton Manning when he won that second Super Bowl And all he did really was not to commit big mistakes and allow that ferocious Denver defense led by Vaughn Miller to dictate the action. But for years, what was the knock on Peyton Manning? He can't win the big one. Well, you got two Super Bowl rings and all those records. History judges you entirely differently. Ben Roethlisberger with the two rings. History will also include, if you're just going to think about the profile, the biography of a Hall of Famer, you can't skip the off-the-field issues. Remember the motorcycle accident? Obviously, that was not his intent, but if you're my franchise quarterback, I don't want you mountain hiking, I don't want you big game hunting, and I don't want you on the back of a motorcycle. We can't skip the suspension after the civil allegations of sexual misconduct, but it does prove that people can put chapters of poor decision-making behind them. It also points out that Roger Goodell can do whatever he wants to do. Remember, Ben Roethlisberger was never charged with a crime there, but effectively it was conduct unbecoming and detrimental to the league that got Roethlisberger on the wrong side of the personal conduct policy. At 39, he looks 39. He looks like 39-year-old quarterbacks used to look in the NFL. How about that iconic picture of, say, George Blanda, who looked like he should have been on the back of a truck working on a loading dock? That's what people in the NFL used to look like in their late 30s, early 40s. Tom Brady looks like a matinee idol. He's changed everything. And isn't it interesting? We are not talking, at least I'm not, but I track the competition. Got to know what's going on other platforms. Not a lot of Brady talk. Is this the end? Because he still has a legitimate possibility of winning another Super Bowl. If he wins another one, why walk away? Unless Giselle says it's time to come home. But wouldn't he be motivated then to make it three in a row? And I know it's always walk away on top. How many people do that? Elway, Michael Strahan. It's a short list of players who were able to cap their career with a championship. And when we talk legacy, there's the recency bias where we focus on endings. You have to look at the entire length of a career. For Roethlisberger, if you want to be critical, I think it's fair to say, if you took the time to go through all of the Pro Bowlers surrounding him on both sides of the football, the way the Steelers were constructed, they should have won at least one more championship. Problem was their inability to close out games in critical situation. And more to the point, they had those Super Bowl wins simultaneous to the rise of Tom Brady and the Patriots dynasty. So maybe I'm quibbling, but I try my best to take a big picture view of how things have evolved. And Roethlisberger had so much talent around him, so many weapons to utilize, and Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. And I realize both those names I just mentioned also created a lot of issues in the locker room. It's another thing that the Steelers had to try to overcome and were unable to fully put it past them, as evidenced by the lack of additional championships. I get a sense when the audience is full, and I've talked a lot of Aaron Rodgers today. I didn't just decide to walk into the studio and start riffing about Rodgers. He was at the podium again talking about his future, which is a bit contradictory because he's the guy who's always telling us, hey, relax. Let's stay in the moment and focus on the task at hand, which this week is another game against the team that he has at least partial ownership in, this time at Lambeau Field. It's Minnesota, although Minnesota did beat the Packers, you recall, in that wild game. We know that Rodgers completely owns the Bears, but he's got a nice stake of the Vikings as well. But Rodgers threw out there because he wants to continue to have all those breadcrumbs piling up that whenever he makes his decision about his future, and retirement is a possibility, he's going to do it sooner rather than later when we get to the offseason. Wake me up when we get there. I don't want to batter the same content over and over again. So let's spin it forward. Because the obvious linkage to the twilight of Ben Roethlisberger's career in the Monday Nighter is Pittsburgh's opponent. Cleveland at 7-8, still mathematically alive, as is Pittsburgh, 7-7-1, the one that tie against the Lions in the game that I wish I could get it out of my head. Who do I call to get the 4 hours that I devoted to watching that absolute dumpster fire? It was so bad, at the end it got good. You couldn't avert your gaze from both teams just finding ways to try to lose the game. And that was the most appropriate tie in the history of the National Football League. But having seen Baker Mayfield for the first time coming off the COVID list on Christmas Day, and I'm not just going to bash him for the 4 interceptions, and I'm going to give him a little bit of leeway because he has been so beat up and because he came directly off the COVID list. Remember, no practicing, jumps on the private jet and has to get to Lambeau Field day of a matchup against a team that could win the Super Bowl. I think, though, towards the end of this year, it's crystallizing in Cleveland the Baker Mayfield dilemma. So if you're going to be reasonable in summing up what's happened so far for Baker, who's probably best known for all the commercials, and the symmetry was brilliant. Just about every time he would throw an interception, change of possession, that means commercial. Fox would go to the two box, you don't miss anything, commercial, next to the live action. And no joke, at least twice, Baker throws the pick, we go to commercial, and he's trying to sell me something. Guy's a Hall of Famer when it comes to marketing and squeezing every dollar out of your career possible, and I have no problem with that. Get paid as much as you can, any way you can. But if we're going down the road of finances, doesn't Cleveland have to be financially responsible if they decide they want to stay in the Baker Mayfield business and they bought themselves another year, already locking him up when they picked up the rookie option on his rookie deal? So next year is taken care of, but any well-run organization has to run through scenarios. And I think the Browns are in a situation where they like Baker Mayfield. Although, remember, none of the current regime, front office or coaching staff, was involved in that decision to take Baker with the number one overall pick. So they have nothing emotionally invested in him, but they're aware of where the team was before he got there. All you got to do is think about his magnificent rookie year, right? The numbers were sensational. A lot of the records that Justin Herbert broke were set by Baker Mayfield just a handful of years ago, as Herbert was a breakout star last year. But that's all balanced by, as Baker's moved forward in his career, he has gotten beat up time and time again. Now, some of it is his own responsibility because the tenacity that allowed him to get to the NFL, despite having a limited skill set, also puts him in danger because he hangs in there. He's looking to extend every play, and then he gets blown up. And he has just gotten crushed this year. So you got to wonder about him long-term, just surviving in the NFL. But let's say he's fully healthy, and let's say he has a more typical year next year. If you're the Browns, can you truly believe in him enough to give him the money he's going to want? Because never lose sight of the fact, with a handful of exceptions, when we're talking about the perception of a player being a franchise quarterback, quote-unquote, how about a premier quarterback? The next guy up for the contract always gets more. That's how it works. Not about fairness or necessarily a reflection of productivity. It's an escalator, and the next guy takes the step up the financial mountain. Well, how in good conscience can the Browns give Baker Mayfield Josh Allen money? There's no way. And if they sat down with Baker and his representatives, all they would have to do is put the numbers, put the resumes side by side and say, Baker, here's where you're at. You see all the other good numbers over there? That's Josh Allen. And we can't pay you Josh Allen money. So maybe there can be a conversation, although it's going to be very hard with egos and self-esteem and precedent that the next guy up always gets more. Can the Browns be the team that bucks that trend and say to Baker, we like you, we respect you, we appreciate your willingness to help us move forward. If you take less, we'll use the old Tom Brady metaphor. You take less, we can pay other people to get you more talent. Well, if you're Baker Mayfield, what's your motivation to take less? Knowing you're one hit away from having your career come to an end. So to me, that is the most interesting quarterback financial decision coming up, not necessarily in the short term, but more on the horizon. I'm trying to spin it forward a little bit. But I think the Browns have to, for the good of the franchise, play it more cautiously with Baker Mayfield. You cannot justify giving him the kind of money that he's going to want because he has not played nearly as well as the quarterbacks who have raised the bar financially. And the direct comp would be because it was Allen who hit the financial jackpot this summer. You can't pay Baker Mayfield Josh Allen money. I'm Brian Weber, in for Rich Eisen. One more segment to get to, and we'll wrap it up with a lot more NFL conversation. We'll make it an LA story. How much confidence should the Rams have in Matthew Stafford, who's always in a giving mood, be it the holidays or not, with way too many interceptions? Brian Weber in for Rich Eisen as we roll on here on The Rich Eisen Show.
Let's talk Sleep Number, people, because quality sleep is so essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, and the same thing for your partner, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side, helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature, quiets your snores or your partner's? Sleep Number does that. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. 10 numbers apart, but it truly is the world of difference. The Sleep Number sleep that you get is unbelievable. You will love it. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now you could save 50%. That's 50%. On the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Brian Weber in for Rich Eisen. Thursday edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Conversation never stops on Twitter. You can tweet me after the program. Be nice. I'm just a fill-in guy with a fragile ego. BW Weber, Weber with two B's. We are winding down today. That means we're warming up for tomorrow's show. We had you fully lined up. In addition to what we've already done today when we went in-depth on the national semifinals coming up tomorrow, enjoy today's conversation with Dan Wolkin, national columnist for USA Today. A reminder, these games start early tomorrow. Cotton Bowl, Cincinnati, massive two-touchdown underdog to Alabama. That kicks at 3:30 Eastern, followed by the Orange Bowl, Georgia and Michigan. We'll run through what could be a few of the X factors and things that might lead to some unpredictable outcomes. And we'll talk more about the flawed industry that is big-time college sports. I understand why the game has to be played at 3:30 Eastern time, primarily because, and I'll steal from, let me give him credit, Dan Wetzel of Yahoo. I chatted with him on a radio show the other day. And I asked him, how could any sane person expect to get real television ratings on New Year's Eve. And he countered with, well, when else would you play these games? They got to be played at some point. And accepted that as much as we love college football, and I love it as much as the NFL, many of you love something else even more. That's getting your drink on. That's partying. Few things in life are undefeated. Crazy is undefeated. Ever try to reason with somebody? I'm not talking about a clinical evaluation. I'm just saying someone in your life who's erratic. You ever win those conversations? Uh-uh. Crazy is undefeated. And your need to get your drink on has a perfect winning percentage. But we'll talk about the games themselves and connect things to the NFL because as much as I love college football, the NFL is king. So let's wrap up this program by using the quarterback position, since we've talked so much about Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield. I'm not going to devote the final 10 minutes to Matthew Stafford. He's not worthy of it. But let's run through teams currently in playoff contention. We'll go through if the playoffs began today, and that'd be weird because it's a Thursday, but the overall linkage will be to my concerns about Matthew Stafford. As much as I have made sports and talking about sports the focal point of my adult life, I'm equally passionate about pop culture and entertainment history, and that's a great thing about the times we live. If you want to know what, say, Steve Allen was all about, yes, another contemporary reference, just pick somebody you like in the talk show genre. If I could have picked another path, I love talk shows, I love the history of talk shows, just like the format, but I'm also cheesy enough to know I would have been a good game show host. And where are the game shows from years gone by? Gene Rayburn is not walking through that door with that skinny microphone. Plus, when they reboot game shows, it's people like Alec Baldwin, Michael Strahan, Elizabeth Banks getting another check. How many boats can you water ski behind, Michael Strahan? You just went to outer space, for Pete's sake. But there was a game show years ago. I wasn't around for it, but I know the history of Johnny Carson pretty well. Before Carson got the Tonight Show, he hosted a game show called Who Do You Trust? Dun, 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 dun. So we'll use that as the organizing principle here. Who do you trust at quarterback amongst the teams currently in the playoff field? And we'll start at the bottom. A la Casey Kasem. Well, count them from 10 to 1, although we don't have to go that deep. Let's just start with the playoff field in the AFC. Somehow, someway, Miami right now is in the playoff mix. In fact, if they win their last two games, Miami's going to the postseason. Now, the challenge is what lies ahead. They got to go to Tennessee on Sunday. Oh, my goodness, it's the Ryan Tannehill Bowl. And you heard me. Hopefully you have stayed with me throughout this final hour of the program. I think Tennessee, arguably, is the second best team in the AFC with a big gulf between them and Kansas City if Derrick Henry is available come playoff time. Miami, a 7-game losing streak followed by a 7-game winning streak. We've never seen that before in the history of the NFL. Got a lot of help when New Orleans had to go to quarterback number 4 this year. Ian Book, continuing the tradition of Notre Dame quarterback shining, huh? He looked overwhelmed. Still, another win for Miami. Next up, Tennessee, then home for the Patriots in the regular season finale. And we know the Patriots, even when they've been transformational at the height of their powers, have had trouble in South Florida for whatever reason. But do I trust Tua? No, the Dolphins don't trust him. That's why they picked up the phone and called Houston to find out more about Deshaun Watson prior to the trade deadline. And even if Miami makes it to the playoffs, I don't think there are any guarantees they're sticking with Tua moving forward. In fact, I gave you Miami as a potential landing spot for Aaron Rodgers. So who do I trust? Tua, not on that list. Next up, the Patriots. Do I trust Mac Jones? No, because I've seen him over the last 3 weeks. Now, I do trust Bill Belichick, and I do trust the right game plan, not as radical as the Monday night game on the road in Buffalo in the midst of that terrible weather, in which Mac Jones was only asked to throw it three times. But maybe you got to find a happy balance, because they asked way too much of him on Sunday against the Bills. Statistically, he had his worst game of the year, coming after what was the week before his worst game of the year at that moment on the road in Indy. So Jones has surpassed expectations because of his physical limitations, but would I trust him come playoff time? No. Carson Wentz, next up, if we're going through the seedings in the AFC, do I trust him? I can't even trust him to be available on Sunday, although, given the change in the NFL's COVID policy and knocking it down from a 10-day to 5-day quarantine, there's a shot he could play in a pivotal game against Las Vegas, but let's put COVID politics aside. Carson Wentz is a shadow of himself. I know he finally played reasonably well against Carolina on Christmas, but I don't trust Carson Wentz at all. Buffalo, yes. Josh Allen, I trust him immensely. I can do that just that concisely. Joe Burrow, yes, I trust him. If you've not looked at the seeding, Cincinnati right now, the 3 seed as potential division champs in the AFC. The 2 seed currently is Tennessee, and for all the reasons I told you, I think they're the second-best team in that conference. Do I trust Ryan Tannehill? Hell no. Do I trust him to hand the football to Derrick Henry? Yes. And let's do it about 35, 37, 39 times, and Mahomes, it goes without saying. NFC, from the bottom up, Philadelphia, currently the 7 seed. Jalen Hurts, marginal trust. Although, I give him a lot of credit for learning on the job, and maybe the Eagles have found a starting quarterback who's more than just a placeholder for the next 3 years. San Francisco. Well, is it Jimmy G with the injured thumb or Trey Lance? I'll go with Jimmy G because he's saying all the right things about being available and playing through the pain. Do I trust him? No. I just saw him on Thursday Night Football. And yes, in fairness, now we know he was dealing with a thumb injury. Well, that occurred in the second quarter. What's the excuse for what happened in the first quarter when he threw that ghastly interception in the end zone after San Francisco marched down the field on the opening drive? Should have been 14-0. The game could have been virtually done. Instead, we saw Jimmy G, who is highly unreliable. Kyler Murray, do I trust him? Not now. He looks mortal. And everything's changed when you had the injury defensively to J.J. Watt and no DeAndre Hopkins. So, no, I don't trust Kyler Murray. Tampa Bay, of course I have trust in Tommy. And that gets us to 3 teams left in the NFC. Yes, I trust Aaron Rodgers, but I don't want to hear his opinions beyond what he thinks about football. Dallas, the 2 seed, I trust Dak, but I don't have to trust him that much because of the defense, which is playing the best football of any unit in the league. That leads us with Matthew Stafford. You are what you consistently do. Matthew Stafford is a turnover machine. You can take him out of Detroit, but Detroit stayed with him as he made the move to Southern California. You watch that Minnesota game? Not one, not two, 3 interceptions. Watch the Packer game? Pick 6. Couple interceptions against the Titans when they lost to Tennessee without Derrick Henry. Couple interceptions against San Francisco. Even though Cooper Kupp is putting up Jerry Rice kind of numbers, Matthew Stafford has a lot to prove. He's never won a playoff game. And my question to you, if you're a Ram fan, comes down to this. What's going to change after all these years in the National Football League and all of the interceptions? You think Matthew Stafford is suddenly going to be a different quarterback because he's wearing a Rams uniform? No way. So that's the biggest issue the Rams have to overcome. And it's a career arc that is the concern. Not what happened on Sunday. It's Stafford just can't hang on to the football, and that is not breaking news. Another terrific time. I want to thank all of our guests. Josh Alper, ProFootballTalk.com, Dan Wolken, USA Today, Lindsey Jones from The Athletic. Thanks as well to Rich and his great team. Wonderful opportunity to sit in for Mr. Eisen. Had a great time again today. All the good people at Westwood One, Bruce Gilbert, Jack Silver, and special thanks to our technical producer, Art Martinez, was brilliant. My name is Brian Weber, in for Rich, and we'll do it again tomorrow here on The Rich Eisen Show.